Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle Clones. What's cracking? TGIF. I hope you packed it in, denimed up, and finished this week strong. Another monster show for you today, starting off with the garbage Thursday night football game between the Texans and the Bengals. Houston did what they had to do. Deshaun Watson broke off that long run, and now the Bengals are calling it what it is, with DB Dre Kirkpatrick dropping some straight fire on his own team, and I quote, "We suck." And the war between LA and San Diego continued, with Jeff in SoCal coming in and not giving us a take on the WNBA playoffs, but some straight fire that got San Diego all fired up. All of that, and Alvy's week that was, brought to you by my man, James Kelly. JK, go ahead and do what you do, or what Alvy usually does, roll it. Let's start with some Thursday night football. Houston beat Cincinnati 13-9. The Bengals are going to have to wear that. Losing at home to a rookie QB, making his first start, and then becoming the first team in nearly 80 years to open the season with two home games and not score a single TD in either one. But then again, the real damage was not to Cincy's pride or their locker room chemistry, although that did seem like a mess afterwards. But the real damage here was to America. Sure, the Bengals have to wear that, but most of all, we all have to wear that game because we all witnessed it. Houston gets the W, but there were no winners last night. It was that bad. 16 penalties, 16 punts, 26 first downs. More penalties and punts than first downs, and it wasn't even close. And sure, a couple of pretty good defensive teams. Pretty good defensive teams, really, really bad offenses. And that made for some terrible football. Unless, of course, you like punts, penalties, incomplete passes, and running plays that go nowhere at all. Everybody knows that classic pizza, sex, football debate. As if there's no such thing as bad pizza, no such thing as bad sex, no such thing as bad football. Yeah, well, last night, football did its very best to push that theory to its limits, to see how far it will bend before it shatters into a million little pieces. I mean, how bad was that game? So bad that even one great moment from Deshaun Watson, transcendent as it was, could not save it from being an all-time bore fest. And that's a tragedy because this was a pretty amazing moment.
Deshaun gets the snap. A little time here now. Pocket collapsing. Watson scrambling forward. Watson avoids a defender. Running to the right. The 40. Watson 35-30. Watson 25-20. Right sideline. 15-10. Cutting inside. Rock and roll. Deshaun Watson. Touchdown, Houston.
Westwood 1. Thank you for that. But keep in mind, a single TD does not a football game make. And even that was not enough to redeem that game. I mean, my biggest problem wasn't even the penalties or the punts or the lack of first downs or the lack of points. It was just a lack of action. Last night was worse than bad. It was boring. Boring. You want some more evidence? Normally, I have absolutely no time for the end of the game clown show when a team of adults desperately tries to play keep away 70 yards from the end zone in a ridiculous attempt to keep the ball and their hopes of a win alive. Those plays are always the most embarrassing and most demeaning to everybody on the field and everybody in the stands and everybody watching at home. Except last night, that was the best play of the game. And I was on the edge of my seat. Roll it.
Tosses it underneath, and it's caught by A.J. Green. He shovels it back to Dalton. He fires it to the far side. It's juggled and now handled by Bernard, trying to run and spin out of trouble to the 25. Bernard looking for blockers. Now he'll throw it backwards to Dalton. He's running to the 30, to the 35. Dalton back outside. Whoa! Caught by Bodine, and he gets drilled by Watt. And that will end the game with an exclamation point.
I mean, that sounded pretty good, but even if you read that, the written description was better than the 59 minutes that preceded it. Check this. This is how it reads. A. Dalton, pass short middle to A. Green to Cincinnati 17, minus 3 yards. Pass back to A. Dalton to Cincinnati 15 for minus 2 yards. Pass back to G. Bernard to Cincinnati 28 for 13 yards. Pass back to A. Dalton to Cincinnati 28 for no gain. Pass back to R. Bodine to Cincinnati 28 for no gain. So when J.J. Watt decked Bengals center Russell Bodine, He was doing it for everybody. Like, finally, this freaking game is over. I couldn't decide whether or not to hit my knees in gratitude or pop a bottle of Cristal. We did it! We did it! We survived that freaking game. It's over. And by the way, I know there were a lot of angry Bengals in that locker room after that game, but could any of them been more pissed than my man Bodine? How are you feeling if you're him and your quarterback just led you into that ER visit waiting to happen? That hit ended that game and nearly ended that guy's life. The center-quarterback relationship is supposed to be one of the tightest on the team, and Dalton nearly got that guy killed. And the worst part is, that was Dalton's best throw of the entire night. So why don't we just move on? Let's move on. Let's put that game in the rear view. And I think I'm this close to going high school football coach and burying the football and my television. But I'll settle for saying, let us never, ever speak of this game ever again. Let's just move on to the next Thursday night game because there's no way it could be any worse. Who is it? Let's see. Let me check the schedule. Rams at Niners. Rams at Niners. Anyway, what's popping, Twitter? Lorenzo Alexander joins us once again. Lorenzo, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Yourself?
Lorenzo, I'm great. It's good to hear your voice. You know, you're coming off that win over the Jets. Lorenzo, it seems like a throwaway question to start an interview, but having seen the vibe inside your locker room after that game, where there was a lot of positive energy, I've got to ask, how good did it feel to start this season with a win?
It felt great. You know, obviously everybody, you know, was having negative comments about, you know, what type of team we're going to be this year. And, you know, obviously having a lot of turnover, a new scheme. And anytime we can come together and come out and put out a great first effort and come away with a win, it's always a great feeling and continues to build that confidence and momentum and chemistry within the locker room.
All right, so what you're talking about, a lot of negativity about what kind of year there might be. I think what you're talking about is this perception from the outside that the team is now rebuilding and maybe even tanking. I know you're a proud guy, somebody who's fought for everything you have in this league. What's your reaction when you hear that discussion?
I mean, it's nonsense. I mean, obviously, you got a lot of great professionals on this team. Me being one of them, Kyle Williams, Eric Woods, Richie Incognito, guys that have been in this league a long time and never won a championship. So the thought of tanking or, you know, losing games purposely is the furthest thing from my mind. And we got a lot of talent on this team, and I think people don't really realize that being in Buffalo. But if you look at our roster, offense, defense, and special teams, we got guys that can go out there and make plays. Now, we got to continue to prove it, continue to build and get better. Because we're nowhere near what our potential is, but we are, you know, obviously off to the great start with the first win and now moving on to Carolina.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us. Now, you mentioned Kyle Williams. You're in your second season with the Bills. It seems like you and he got on the same page awfully fast. How would you describe the chemistry the two of you have on the field?
I mean, it's great. I mean, we hang out in the off season. We have our families. So I think a lot of our chemistry, just talking ball, knowing each other, definitely translates to on the field. But he's a guy that just knows the game so well and has played a long time. So it's just natural when it comes to him. It's kind of an unspoken trust when we're just out there. We play off each other well, and we have a good feel of what the offense is trying to do with us, with protections, with the offensive line sliding. And he does a great job of calling up games and dialing up stuff. And a lot of times it ends in a result of a sack or pressure. So love working with him. One of the best pros I've been around.
You know, it's interesting because when you talk to him or about him like that, I can tell how much you respect him, but it's reciprocal. It's mutual because one of the things he said about you, quote, is you're probably one of the couple of guys in the league that I admire the most from an effort standpoint, from a perseverance standpoint, and the way he is as a guy, end of quote. I mean, that's extremely high praise, especially from somebody like that. So what's it mean to you to hear something like that from a guy like that?
I mean, it means a lot. I mean, and that's why I play the game, you know, obviously to get a lot of respect from my teammates and just trying to be that same guy each and every day. I mean, you see guys that come and go and have highs and lows, and my whole thing is just trying to be consistent. And I really just learned that from another guy, London Fletcher, that played in Buffalo a long time. I played with him in Washington as well, and just, you know, being of that same elk. And Kyle exemplifies that each and every day as well. And it's easy to follow that lead and just try to, you know, outdo him in so many ways, just trying to be that constant leader, professional, and leader in the locker room.
Clones, I need 1 minute to talk to you about Stamps.com. Stamps.com saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package using just my computer and printer, and the mailman picks it right up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. And you can create your Stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your own convenience 24/7. It's convenient, it's easy, it's reliable, it's flexible. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. I use Stamps.com because I can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, and any class of mail I have using my own computer and printer. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the very top of the homepage, type in Rome. Stamps.com, enter Rome. Stamps.com, never go to the post office ever again. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. We're talking to Buffalo Bill, Lorenzo Alexander. You know, one of the guys you also mentioned a few moments ago was Richie Incognito. Let me get your thoughts. What kind of a teammate is he? And then when you first were going to play with him, what were your perceptions of him?
Right. I mean, you know, I think everybody thinks about the Miami thing when you mention his name. And to be honest, I was telling him this other day while we was walking into the locker room, was like, yeah, Rich, I love you now, man. But the first couple of weeks, I had my eye on you. I had to kind of check you out and see what type of dude you were, because I wasn't quite sure. He was probably on my most hated list for playing against him from the years when he was with the Rams. But he's a great guy, great teammate, a guy I'll go to war with any day of the week, and would definitely want him on my team, because if you're walking down a dark alley and you got something bad about to happen, that's definitely a guy you want to have your back.
See, that's really something, because normally somebody like you in that position might say, hey, look, I hated that guy when he was on the other side, but the second he came in this locker room, he was one of us. But that's not what you're telling me. You told me, hey, I was still looking at this guy out of the corner of my eye like, I'm not so sure about you. So, Lorenzo, what do you think that is? I mean, was he misunderstood in any way, or has he changed?
I think he just misunderstood. I mean, he has a unique personality, and if you've ever been around Rich, you know he's going to always – walk around the gray, but he's not disrespectful. He's very loving. I mean, it really comes down to locker room talk and understanding where his heart is. And he just loves to kid around. He's a big kid and messing with people all the time. And you get to know who he is as a person. You understand it's out of love. He's just messing around. But it's never disrespectful or really ever crossing the line to where I've ever felt in a place to where I was uncomfortable or disrespected in a certain way. So, like I said, I love him. Gotten to know him, gotten to see who he really is, his character, his hard work ethic, and the professionalism he brings to his locker room. And I would build my team around a guy like that any day of the week.
Lorenzo Alexander, my guest. Now, when you and I spoke back in May, you said that you love Sean McDermott. Now that you've had more time to be around him, you've got your first win under him. How do you feel about the coach now?
Same way. I mean, obviously, we won the game, so it's really never going to change. And love to see, you know, how you feel about a guy when things aren't going as well. That's when you really, I think, the real feelings come out. But I think it's going to be the same, because he's a guy that doesn't change. He's very true to his vision and the culture that he's trying to build. And I don't think whether, you know, we go off and win the next three games or lose the next three games, that's going to change, because he understands that greatness takes a while to develop and that you always have to have that foundation. And that can never waver, because once it starts wavering, you lose your sense of identity and who you are. And I just love the energy that he brings, the presence that he has, and just the way he's cultivated chemistry on this team so quickly and so early, having, you know, one of the biggest turnovers in the league. I think we have like 30 or so new guys. But it feels like I've known a lot of these men for a long time, just because I've gotten to know them personally off the field and got to know their stories. And coming to play ball just makes it easier.
So, Lorenzo, what's that like? I don't think that the average fan understands that. When you guys are doing what you do and you're together every single day and you're paying a price physically, emotionally, mentally, and these are guys, right, that you get to know, and you know what they've gone through off the field, and you all have your own journey. And then all of a sudden, because the business is so bottom line, it's so cutthroat, and you bleed with this guy and you go to battle with this guy, and then he's just gone. He's just gone. What's that like? Yeah. How do you approach that?
I mean, that's hard. It's heart-wrenching. That's why, you know, the fourth preseason game cuts. I mean, that's probably the hardest time around the league, because you have gone through, you know, thick and thin with a lot of these guys, you know, on the practice fields, OTAs, mini camps, Being a guy that was cut myself a couple of times, I understand the mental, you know, anxiety that you'd be going through because you're finally trying to achieve your dream, and then you may leave or go somewhere else, or a veteran player, your family's here, now you got to move your whole family. That stuff is hard. That's real life. And it's hard to see guys go through it, but you understand it's part of the business. But, our relationships go beyond the game. So just because a guy's no longer here, it's not like we don't call or talk or still have that relationship.
You know, last time you were on, we talked about that very thing. We talked about your journey, which is amazing, and all the obstacles that you've had to overcome to get where you are right now. You know what it's like to be on the bubble, and you know what it's like when cutdown day comes. But now you're coming off a season where you were top three in the NFL in sacks. You were the MVP of the Pro Bowl. So right. Do you feel like that you're good and there are no worries now? Or is there always a little bit of that anxiety in the back of your head when cutdown day does come?
Yeah, you know what? The anxiety is not there, but I never feel like I'm okay because I understand how this league works, man. I've seen, you know, guys that you just was a shoe-in to make a team, you know, get released, cut, traded. And, you know, I grew up watching, you know, Jerry Rice play for the 49ers and be the one of the best of all time, or Joe Montana. Those guys ended on different teams. So in my mind, if guys of that caliber can end up playing with a different organization, even after a successful season, it can happen to anybody. But I just approach my work each and every day, having confidence in what I bring to this team, and that I know God is going to put me where I need to be, whether it's with the Buffalo Bills, which, you know, that's what I pray for, but it could also be for another team. And I have to be okay with that as long as I go out there and put my best foot forward and give everything I have and to be in the best version of myself each and every single day. Some things I just can't control. And, you know, whether a coach wants to keep me or not, those are normally things that are out of my control. All I can do is control my energy and effort that I bring to the team each and every single day.
I love that. Plus, you talk about trying to be the best version of yourself. Let's talk for 1 minute before you go about the best version of you. And by that, I mean this. You were third in the league in sacks last year, but even midseason you were saying, quote, I don't look at myself as a sack artist. I'm not ultra talented. I'm not off the charts in anything. I have to make up for it in other ways. I mean, you were the MVP of the Pro Bowl. You're a two-time All-Pro. So if you're not off the charts in anything, you have to make up for it in other ways. What are the other ways? Is it just will or is it something else?
Yeah, I would say my intelligence, studying film, understanding what my opponents are trying to do to me. You know, able to have one step on them in that regard, getting to the ball just because I know where they're going with it. And then number two, just playing with a relentless effort and passion for the game. So, you know, you may be matching me first, second quarter, but by the third quarter, I'm still bringing it to you like I started the game with, whether that's running to the ball, taking on double teams, whatever that may be, at another level. I think all that, you know, kind of comes and kind of raises my production level up. Because as you said, I mean, you look at me, you know, I'm 235. I probably run a 4.6, 4.7, 40. Nothing is going to go, ooh, you know, that's an ultra-talented athlete. Like, you feel like a Von Miller or a Khalil Mack out there. But I think with the combination of everything that I bring to the game, I'm able to be productive and make plays out there.
All right, you've got Carolina on Sunday. How do you go about putting pressure on Cam Newton and making him uncomfortable?
I mean, I think we can do that with our front four. I mean, you look at Jerry, you look at Shaq Lawson, you look at Marcell Dareus, Kyle Williams, myself. You got Ryan Davis that comes off the bench, Eddie Yarborough. We have a committee of guys that can get after the passer, and that's what we have to do. You don't necessarily want to blitz him because if he breaks contain, then it becomes backyard football to him, then he's making big plays. So if we can handle him with our front four, get after him, hit him early and often, and not allow him to get in the rhythm since he hasn't played a lot of football this year, we should be able to be successful against him this weekend.
So one last thought. I mean, you've played around the NFL. You've seen all the fan bases. Everybody thinks they've got the best fan base. But I heard you say it just here moments ago. I pray that I stay in Buffalo. What about the Bills Mafia? What's it like to play in front of those folks?
Man, this is a unique city when it comes to tailgating and people having passion for the football. I mean, anytime you have a special or a documentary that's made and dedicated to your fan base, you know what type of fans you have. I mean, these guys – bleed blue, Bills Mafia. They bring it each and every week. I mean, it's really like a college atmosphere. I mean, they get crazy out here before games. I mean, Friday night, our RV lot is sold out. People out there tailgating, you know, 2-3 days ahead of time. So it's just amazing to be able to walk into a stadium like that with that type of energy. And all we have to go out there and do is play fast, play hard, and we know they're gonna have our backs.
I got 60 seconds. You mentioned the college atmosphere. You went to a great college. What's it mean to you to be a Cal Bear?
It's awesome. You know, we have an association with a lot of great players that are still in the league. Aaron Rodgers, Marshawn Lynch that came back in the league and a great heritage, but also, you know, being academically number one institution as well. So it's a great program, academics and sports, and it was a great time for me because I'm from the Bay Area, so I got to play in front of friends and family each and every weekend.
Andrew Sendejo is my guest. Andrew, nice to have you on the show. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good, good. So you opened up the season on Monday night with that win over the Saints. So let me start right there. Anytime you go up against an offense run by Drew Brees, you know it's going to be a challenge. What was the approach going into the game, and what did you make of the way you guys executed that plan?
Yeah, obviously going into last week, we knew they had a high-powered offense, and you know, really it was just going to have to be tight in coverage on the back end and let our guys up front do what they do. But, you know, overall was a well-executed game plan and got out of there with a win.
All right, so one of the big talking points also, of course, was the return of Adrian Peterson to Minnesota. And as a defense, you guys pretty much shut him down. Are you going to tell me that that was just another challenge and another guy, or maybe did you have a little something extra for the Hall of Famer?
You know, we just went out there and played. We didn't necessarily, you know, worry about, you know, him, his homecoming and things like that. We just... we kind of preach around here just to do your job and allow someone else to do their job. So it wasn't really too much put into it, honestly.
Andrew Sendejo, my guest. Your D coordinator, George Edwards, said this about you, and let me lay it out. Quote, when you say he's a professional, he's going to eat right. He's going to take care of his body. He's going to get rest. He's going to be in the playbook. We can go from the classroom to the field. You're going to see it. You're going to hear it exactly the way that we put it in. And I think that makes everybody around him comfortable. End quote. I mean, it's quite a quote from a coach. How much do all those little things, eating right, getting rest, taking care of your body, impact how you're able to show up on the field on game day?
I think that's kind of what, you know, I've prided myself on just throughout my career is just, you know, the little things, doing everything exactly how you were coached to do it. And I think that's a big thing that, you know, pretty much every coach would preach is to take it from the meeting to the practice to the game. And then, you know, in this league, you just got to do everything you can to help your body out to be ready on Sunday and just the, you know, the physical grind that you endure through the season. So I just try to help myself out whichever way I can and ultimately just be in the best possible condition I can be for Sundays.
Now, it's one thing to be about the details or to say you're about the details, but you actually described this pretty well. An example of this, you did a video for Uninterrupted when you first arrived at training camp, and you broke down the importance of bringing your own bedding and your own toilet paper. Start with the bedding. What is your strategy for the perfect training camp bedding, and why is that so important?
Well, you know, you just get provided with the dorm beds. They might be slightly upgraded from a dorm bed, but not too much. So obviously sleep is very crucial to, you know, just everything, really, recovery, just, you know, so many things. So I always bring extra mattress topper, you know, some nice comfortable sheets, some blankets, extra pillows, just everything that you need to, you know, just to be like you're at your bed at home, you know, just so you can have a good night's sleep. And then obviously the toilet paper as well. That's a, you know, I learned that the hard way, you know, after my first training camp in Mankato when I didn't bring my own. But after that, you know, you just realize that all over campus you're not provided with quality toilet paper. So I just bring my own down there every year.
Andrew Sendejo, nicely done. That whole thing about the bedding and the beds, I mean, knowing what we know about athletes, I mean, the highest caliber athletes and rest and recovery, what the hell are they doing putting you guys in dorm beds still?
You know, I really don't mind the whole dorm thing. I feel like it kind of brings you, it brings you back to your college days when you had to live in a dorm, and it kind of reminds you of, you know, kind of the grind that you had to go through to get to where you're at. And also just being in the dorms, you know, you don't have to worry about anything else except for football. You're just kind of secluded away from the world. You can kind of check out from the real world, really. You don't even know what day it is or anything. You're just all about ball. So, I mean, I really don't mind it, honestly.
I get it. I get that, and I respect that. I guess, though, you have to draw the line somewhere, and it sounds like you're going to draw the line at cheap butt wipes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I draw the line there because, you know, it's training camp. Everything's a grind, you know. You're mentally grind, you're grinding, you know, you're physically exhausted, so you know, you just want to help yourself out in any way that you can, And that was, you know, it's just one little thing. It's all about the little things, you know, the little details.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, I mentioned also when you came on that there's a great story and backstory to this. Fact of the matter is you were undrafted coming out of Rice in 2010, and a lot of that was due to the fact that you had an ankle injury your senior year. But then you went to play for the Sacramento Mountain Lions in the United Football League. What was that experience like? What was the football like there?
You know, it was actually, you know, they had a lot of guys that had just come from NFL rosters, or guys that, you know, came from big schools that, you know, didn't get drafted or signed or anything like that. So the competition was still good, and, you know, all the coaching staffs were pretty much NFL-based, guys that had been coaching in the NFL for a while or just came from an NFL team. So, you know, I think the whole goal of that league was to try to make it like a D-league type deal, and I was fortunate that that was around for me because I didn't get drafted, and, you know, I didn't want to go play in the CFL, so that was kind of my best route to take, and so I was able to kind of capitalize on that. So I'm thankful that that was around to, you know, help me, give me a chance to continue to play.
All right, so you get your shot to play in the NFL, and then you come in, you play some special teams, you play safety. So obviously, if you're going to play in that league and you're going to play in those spots, there's a certain kind of fearlessness that you have to have. But then there's what you did last summer when you rappelled down a skyscraper in Austin as part of a fundraiser for Make-A-Wish Central in South Texas. What's it like to lean over the edge of a skyscraper with only the balls of your feet touching the building? And then what's going through your mind at that point?
You know, when I signed up for that, I really didn't even think about the fact that, like, I was going to be up there at some point and be hanging off the edge of it until I was actually up there. And, the first thing they did is, you know, they didn't even tell me I was, like, fully locked in or anything. They just said, like, all right, you're going to, you know, walk your heels off the edge, and you're going to just lean back and take your hands off the rope. And I was like, okay, well, am I, like, good to go? And then once you kind of get done with that, you're basically parallel to the street down below. And once you get through with that, I mean, the worst is kind of over. And then you just hold on, just rappel down. But it was a pretty neat deal that I had seen, like, the summer before, and I wanted to do it. So, you know, they had the Make-A-Wish kids down there, so there was a costume contest. So I dressed up as a Ninja Turtle and rappelled down the W Hotel in Austin.
I love that. I was going to ask you that, you know, look good, feel good, feel good, play good, yeah. Play good, rappel good. Which turtle did you dress up as?
It was Raphael.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I like it. Now, you stare down something like that, I got to think that if you can get through something like that, there's nothing you can't get through. One more thing before you go. I love this story, too. Back in the spring, you went to your mailbox, and you saw a ton of letters, and you joked that initially you thought maybe it was a collection of parking tickets, but in reality, they were letters from every single player on the roster at Rice thanking you for the gift to the program, which was a nutrition center. What did that response mean to you?
You know, I think it's really just a testament to the head coach at Rice and the type of program he's running. And, you know, even when I was there, we would write thank you letters to alumni for, you know, donations and just their continued support. And so it was kind of cool to, like, see it all go full circle to where I was the guy getting the letters. Now, I honestly thought it was the parking tickets because I kind of posted this kind of smart-ass post on Instagram about the nutrition center and about, you know, hopefully they could void all my unpaid parking tickets at Rice.
Right.
And so I thought after that, they're like, all right, well, you know, in typical Rice fashion, we'll show you. And they would send me all my parking tickets.
Right.
But it was actually just thank you notes from all the guys. So that was really cool.
I love that. That's
and
really cool.
I went through each and every single one of them. And, you know, I graded out the who had the best handwriting. And by no surprise, it was one of the kickers.
It's tremendous. You know, it's funny. I've talked to so many guys from so many schools over the years. You mentioned, quote, typical Rice fashion. So finally, when you look back on your time at Rice, obviously it was a really important time to you and you made this great donation. But when you look back on your time at Rice, what sticks out to you the most?
Man, I just remember it being a grind, just, you know, having to take on, you know, all the athletics and the academics at a school like that. Just waking up early and, you know, staying up late and then having to do it all over again every day, all the time. And, you know, you kind of, it's hard to appreciate it when you're there and you're young and you're kind of grinding it out. But then, you know, later on in life, you really start to appreciate it when you, you know, can graduate from a university like that.
Philadelphia cornerback Jalen Mills joins us. Jalen, nice to have you on. How are you?
How you doing, man?
Good. Good, dude. How about you? How are things?
I'm good. I'm great, man. I'm great.
Good to hear it. All right, so you go on the road on Sunday against a division rival in Washington. You beat them in their house. Always important to start the year with a win, obviously. But how much better when you started off with a 13-point win on the road in your division?
I mean, it's great. You know, it's definitely a great feeling. You know, it was a tough one. You know, the game wasn't perfect, you know, but we came out strong. But for sure, you know, that was one that we wanted just for the simple fact that last year, you know, when we played in the same stadium, you know, those guys, they just ran it down our throat, you know. And we pride ourselves on stopping the run. And then when the quarterback decides to put the ball in the air, you know, as a secondary, you know, make plays on the ball. So for sure, you know, for us to open up that game away and to play those guys, it was very big for our team.
Jalen Mills joining us. Now, early in the fourth quarter, you're up 19-17. Washington, though, driving. They get down to your 14-yard line. Kirk Cousins lofts a pass to Jamison Crowder that you intercepted on the goal line. That was your first career pick. Take me through the play. What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, just really honestly, man, for one, you know, our D-line was getting pressure, you know, all day. You know what I mean? Those guys were just playing very relentless and with a fast, fast motor. And, I mean, then we have a great call from the defensive coordinator. You know, I have Malcolm Jenkins up on the quarterback. Patrick Robinson also kind of got in the way, I guess, kind of make him throw the ball off a little bit. I mean, he kind of just threw it to me. And, you know, as a DB, you know, they always say we can't catch. So I had to catch that ball for sure. I mean, I think it was at a great time.
Jalen, that's funny you say that. They do say that, right, about DBs, that if you could catch, you'd be a wide receiver, but you can't, so you're a DB. It's something to laugh at, or do you kind of take that personally? Like, come on, we can catch. We're the best athletes, so we're on the other side.
Definitely. I definitely think, you know, and I don't want nobody to think I'm being biased or anything. I definitely think, you know, playing defensive back is the hardest position in the league besides playing quarterback. Just for the simple fact that I have to do everything that a guy is doing, but I'm doing it backwards. And I'm always at least one or two steps behind him because it's always off anticipation and reaction. So for sure, I would take that serious, for sure.
Jalen Mills joining us. Now, you were named a starter earlier this season, and now you're the number one cornerback on that team. Safety Malcolm Jenkins said, quote, mentally, he's been the number one cornerback since he got here. If you ask him, in his mind, he should have been a first or second round draft pick. That's how he thinks of himself. So let me ask you this. Now that it's official and you are a number one corner, does it change anything at all for you, or does it just feel like, yeah, this is pretty much where I belong?
No, it doesn't change anything. I have to come in each and every day with the same mindset, you know what I mean, the same mental focus, that mental sharpness that I have each and every play. I have to come in, you know, give my teammates my all at practice. So once the game happens, you know, it's just second nature.
Now, when you showed up at training camp as a rookie last year, you were rocking green hair, and D coordinator Jim Schwartz said to you, quote, if you're going to be wearing that green hair, you better be out here making plays, end quote. What was your reaction when he said that to you at that time?
I kind of just, you know, laughed it off a little bit, but then at the same time, I knew by him saying that it was a little bit more attention on me now than what I thought it was going to be. You know, that was the first day at camp. So, I knew I had to get my P's and Q's, and, I mean, I just came each and every day, worked hard, and, you know, tried to impress the coaching staff and gain the trust of the players and the coaches.
Jim, before I lost you, you were talking about how you turned or why you turned your hair green and what the opportunity meant to you. So what about that?
Yeah, you know, like I said, you know, I just told Howie and Coach Unlin, you know, that they changed my life, and I was going to show them, you know, the commitment with the team and come in and work hard each and every day. And I think I kind of, like I said, I took that step. You know, the extra step by actually turning my hair green. You know, you always hear about, you know, the Eagles fans and the people in the city of Philadelphia, they always bleed green. You know, so I wanted to show my commitment not to just the Eagles and the coaching staff, but also to the city of Philadelphia.
Now, you're an LSU guy, of course, and you also know that LSU is DBU. How do you explain the tradition of defensive backs at LSU, and what makes you guys so special?
I think guys, you know, even as young guys, you know, year in and year out, you know, these amazing freshmen, you know, getting in the game as defensive back and then making these great plays, you know, in these big games, you know, versus Alabama, versus the Ole Miss, the Arkansas. And then as a young guy, you know, you look to the guys from the past time, you know, Ryan Clark, you know, Corey Webster, Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu. You see those guys and then see those guys also doing the things that they're doing in the NFL, and you those are your idols. But at the same time, you want to get to the level that those guys are on, but you want to beat them as well. So it's a competition between the best, you know what I mean? And when you have, I feel like you have that friendly competition against the best, even as a young guy trying to compete with the older guys, it just pushes you and it drives you to get better and better each and every day, whether you're working on, you know, your technique, whether you're working on your speed, whether you're working on your eyes, you know, when you're in a playbook, and it's just a commitment day in and day out. And you know, just for the simple fact that you have that target on your back each and every day, you know what I mean? You know, guys, they're going to talk about those LSU DBs, and they're going to try to come at you. They want to try to prove you wrong. And so I feel like that mindset, it's just a mindset, and guys know the mindset, and it's a grind each and every day.
Canelo and Triple G, finally, the fight that everybody has wanted, that's been talked about for years, that looked like it would never, ever happen. But here we are. Here we freaking are. Better late than never, which I'll get to in a minute. But the last fight that was this big in boxing was Mayweather-Pacquiao, the biggest disappointment ever. Nothing ever lives up to the hype, but nothing ever lived down to the hype more than that fight. Even Mayweather admits that. That's not this, though. I can almost guarantee this fight's going to live up to it because styles make fights. And Triple G has got the perfect fighting style if you're a fight fan. He's always coming forward, he never takes a step back, and he's only looking to put somebody in a body bag. He's looking to bomb guys out every single time. He's not a defensive fighter, interested only in self-preservation and trying not to get hit. He's the most terrifying power puncher in the game, and he has been for a long, long time. And he knows, and to me this is huge, Triple G knows this is the best chance he's ever going to have to become a household name, because as great as he is, he's not that. His best chance to reach critical mass, as opposed to only gaining the respect of hardcore fight fans. He knows what's at stake, and he's going to try to do what he always does, headhunt. The problem is, it took so long to get this fight made. Safe to say, he may not be the same guy he was when it first came up. In fact, I don't think he is. Dangerous still yet. He could win that fight. He could even win it in spectacular fashion. But I'm going to say at age 35, Triple G is not the same fighter that he was when they first started talking about this fight. And I don't think that's a coincidence either. As an example, how long did Mayweather put off fighting Pacquiao? Long enough that by the time they finally did get in the ring, Pacquiao was not nearly the terror that he had been previously. And I don't think that's a coincidence. That's smart. Triple G, in fact, would have you believe that the only reason this fight actually did get made finally was because he didn't knock out Danny Jacobs. And that when it didn't happen, it appeared that Golovkin had lost something. And only then did Canelo and his promoter Oscar De La Hoya rush in to make this fight. Again, frustrating as hell for fight fans who've been waiting for this fight, but smart of Canelo and De La Hoya. Because the fact is, whereas Triple G was not what he was when they first started talking about this fight, neither was Canelo, but Canelo's better. He probably was not ready for that fight back then, but he is now. And while he's not going to stand directly in front of you looking to land the kind of haymakers that Golovkin would, he's not going to back up either. He's a great counterpuncher. He's the superior boxer of the two. This is the fight of the year, and the winner of the fight will probably go down as the sport's best pound for pound for right now. And best of all, you're not going to feel let down if you throw down for this fight. There are no locks, but to me, this is the closest thing there is to a sure thing. And it says here it's going to live up to the hype, that it's going to be a war, that you're going to get your money's worth. I threw down myself for the fight. I paid for it myself. I'm into it. I can't wait for it, actually. All good on a Monday. What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Great to have you here. I hope you had an awesome weekend. Let's get this thing going. We're coming off the first weekend of the NFL. Interesting weekend, to say the least. The best place to start is right here, except I'm going to need a little music for this rant. This guy brings a certain edge, a certain nasty, a certain toughness that they have not had in recent years.
Who does that?
And it's got an impact on everybody on both sides of the ball. That's how valuable he is. Tony Jefferson. Jefferson. Tony, are you going to give out those code names, or are they code names and do we not get to find out what they are?
Yeah, they're code names. They shall not be released to the public.
Respect. Now, struggle is real. What was tougher, giving up the double-double or the Twitter app?
Oh, you can't do that to me. I'm going to have to say the double-double, though.
Ben Smack, hey, thanks for getting me in.
Email.
Awesome call. Freaking rack charger Mike, Chuck Pagano.
Credit 49ers and...
You know, I could have said I love you.
Good one, AP. Adrian Peterson coming back to Minnesota as a Saint. Straight trash, homie. If he's already snapping, it's going to be a very long season or a very short one.
Email.
This email reads, I'm a Vikings fan, and when I get hyped, I like to take my shirt off.
Hey, I like to get hyped for games. When I get hyped, I take my shirt off.
That's got nothing to do with the Vikings. He doesn't play for the Vikings. He plays for the Cardinals. What did that have to do with anything at all?
Oh, the kick may have been blocked in a box.
Brutal loss, but it says right here, this is not the same old Chargers. The same old Chargers would have it happen over and over again. This crew won't. And I'm going on record right now and saying it. Charlie Hoffman is my guest. Now that you're on that team, what does it mean to represent the U.S.?
Yeah, I'm a 40-year-old virgin. First time on a team event.
You've been saving yourself, Charlie. How do you think it's going to feel?
Hopefully it feels really, really good.
I didn't mean it to be disrespectful at all. So I apologize for doing it in the middle of the field.
That flag plant was epic, and your performance was legendary. I'm sorry that you're sorry. Your apology is not accepted. Sooners head coach Lincoln Riley is my guest.
I was fine with it because I think that's how I really felt. He was emotional about it. I mean, how could you not be?
Jim, this call is a touchdown. I'm out.
Dodger baseball.
Tom Verducci is my guest.
Guys are in and out of the lineup. Starting pitchers have too much rest in my book to stay sharp because they know they've had such a big lead that they can play basically glorified spring training. I don't think this is something that we're going to see carry into the playoffs.
Wow. Great to see the Dodgers get a win. They're really making this a habit. Sincerely, total eclipses. Hey, don't stare directly at Phil's tweet. You might go blind. Amir Abdullah is my guest.
Theo is the name brand guy. He buys a lot of, like, Christian Louis Vuitton and Balenciaga. So, of course, you're going to look good if you're wearing that stuff. Theon is the guy who probably needs some help. You know, he's the guy who will wear, like, corduroy pants with, like, a windbreaker top.
Joe in East Lansing.
Jimmy, thank you for showing some love to the Lions. We're going to the playoffs again, 2 years in a row. I don't know what we're going to do when we get there. You know Aaron Rodgers. He might do a Hail Mary.
Thanks, Joe. In East Lansing. You can't go with a four-letter bomb like that. Derek Mason.
Jim Rome, what's happening? I'm doing well. I mean, Jay's a beast. I love him. His football IQ is tremendous. Jay Cutler is one of those guys, man, you want to be in a foxhole with.
Tell Scott he's full of
I said, Coach, what do you do? He goes, I compete every day still. Every day from the time I get up at everything I do. In exercise. In golf. In breaking down opponents.
Would have. Should
have. Now at 82, this guy still has it. Just wrecking clones. You know, Drew, I'm not sure I've ever said this. You just made my show better. That's not bad at all. You didn't split the atom, but that's not bad at all.
San Dimas, I want to hear from somebody in Riverside County. You're no longer only about meth. Now there's rowing, sculling, quadruple sculling, decoxless fours. Get ready.
Aaron, what's going on?
Man, that's got to be big, getting the 2028 Olympics. I hope they get the shipment of cocaine in time for the Russian horse.
You know what? Don't you worry about us. We'll be just fine. But I'm not worried about whether or not the cocaine will be here for the Russian hose. Aaron in Corvallis.
Hey, Jim. You cracked me up. Phenomenal. My folks were at the 84 Olympics. I did not like TV. I've been listening to you since 1991. I spent a lot of time in Manhattan Beach. I want to represent the Beaver Country and the Pac-12. You know, I'm excited about my Raiders. You know, I'm an A's fan, but today is my 50th birthday.
So I'm like, hey, why don't you just use my Audi? I'm not sure how I approach trying to get my car back.
I got bad news for you. You're not getting that car back. It's gone. And then you're going to lose your job, and then you'll be a bum in the streets. Bum Smack, it's back.
How dare you?
Kidding, Allie.
How? Did you just give yourself a straight fire?
Family on three. 1, 2, 3. Family.
Boom. You just put a little bug in my ear. I'll wrestle with that thought a little bit.
Jesus Christ.
Mommy, Daddy, I've been watching you.
It's a good day.
Oh, yeah.
Let's roll.
Good night now.
I don't know, Alvy. If I were you, I would not take any more days off. James Kelly just crushed that. I don't know, Alvy. I would not be taking any more days off there, Wally Pip. Look at James Kelly just showing up out of nowhere and nailing that week that was. That was one of the better week that was's that I've heard. Thank you very much for checking in. Thank you for downloading the Jim Rome podcast. You know I appreciate that so much. Another episode is dropping on Tuesday. Enjoy your weekend and the big fight. Check back Monday for more Daily Jungle. Thank you very much for listening. I'm out.